This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. It's great to have you with us for the Wednesday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. We have a flood advisory for some parts of the Chicago area, but for this afternoon, sunny and a temperature in around 80 or so. It's 78 at O'Hare and 78 at the lakefront.
WBBM News Time now, 12:06, the Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank, a check of the markets and more at Bloomberg. Here's Elisa Parenti.
Cisco and Chris, we are at our highest levels of the day. Investors got a surprisingly weak report on jobs added last month, but clearly it doesn't seem to be a worry. The Dow is up 175 points, and we've moved back above 25,500. That is a gain of 0.2%. NASDAQ up 0.5% or 35, S&P gaining 19. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index is up 0.3%. ADP reports companies pulled back on hiring, adding the fewest jobs in May than in any month over the last 9 years, just 27,000. The thinking on Wall Street may be that this is more evidence for the central bank to consider cutting interest rates. And perhaps in retaliation for the U.S. focus on Chinese telecom Huawei, China is now targeting U.S. companies. Today, talk of cracking down on Ford, ordering the carmaker to pay more than $23 million for alleged antitrust violations. That's for the Ford in partnership with a company in China. So Ford stock here in the U.S. is down 1.3%, Boeing up almost 1%. As we learned, that company's been negotiating with China over what could be one of its largest orders ever of wide-body 787 and 777 jets, 100 aircraft in all. Back to you, Cisco and Chris.
Thanks, Elisa. On today's Noon Business Hour, there are some questions about job growth. We're going to be talking about those and also some criticism of the tariff war.
A double dose of Personal Finance Wednesday. How to invest in stocks if you've never done it before. Some help for the beginner. Also, why getting rid of a credit card could actually be really bad for your credit score. All of that and loads more on today's Noon Business Hour.
Information you can bank on. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The popularity of DNA testing is leading to questions about the possibility of genetic discrimination. We're going to be covering that in our next segment. Right now, trade, private sector employment, and oil are top of mind today. We're joined by Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, welcome back to the Noon Business Hour today. Let's talk trade for about a moment at least. There has been some concern. Some people are calling it Trump's pivot to using tariffs as a political weapon being dangerous for the U.S. economy.
Yeah, that's been discussed. It's been speculated about, and markets were weak last week as a result. There's companies, U.S. companies that have been doing business in China. They see tariffs imposed on China, so they start thinking, well, let's go someplace else where the wages are low. How about Mexico? It's close. And then suddenly you have the prospect that Mexico may be hit with tariffs. Even a country like India that has long been thought of as a developing country with certain trade advantages, now in the White House way of thinking is going to be turned off those particular advantages. It will no longer be considered a developing country. So, you know, if you're a U.S. company and you're looking for a place to set up your overseas supply chain, where exactly can you go where you might not be vulnerable to those tariffs? That is weighing on some corporate boardroom minds right now.
And that will be an impact on the economy in some way, do you think?
Yes. In fact, we've already been seeing it. You know, when tariffs first came out in the middle part of last year, a lot of people said, well, this is a negotiating tactic. They won't be around for very long. We'll deal with the extra costs, maybe pay for it out of our own earnings. But now that the tariffs look like they're going to be around for a while, and now that they look like they may be applied to other countries as well, firms are starting to rethink that temporariness that they originally imagined for those tariffs. And what that does is it makes people think, well, we better move our our supply chains now. That, of course, increases their costs.
Now, this has obviously been very tough on the Chinese economy. I guess the question that no one knows except for the Chinese is how long would they deal with that? Do they feel the pressure to make a deal quickly?
Yeah, it's hard to know how quickly the political pressure is building, but Cisco, we can tell that their economy is starting to feel some pressure. It was slowing late last year. They pumped some stimulus into the economy to prop it up, and now it's starting to slow again. We think a lot of that has to do with trade. And our view is that both countries, both leaders, presidents of the U.S. and China, will start to feel political pressure as their economies start to slow further. So the tariffs almost have a built-in time clock on them that's going to expire and sound the buzzer, and that's going to increase the political pressure on both countries, we think. We think there will be a deal. It won't be comprehensive, but there will be a deal sometime in the coming months, and it's just going to be dictated, the timing will be, by how quickly the economies deteriorate.
Now, let's talk about jobs. I guess what no one expected in May, pretty much a near halt in job growth.
Yeah, so I mean these sorts of things, the labor market is pretty strong overall, we think, still, but you do get these monthly fluctuations, and this one would be if we get the tomorrow's report from the Friday's report from the Labor Department, which is the big one. If that follows through with this ADP report, that could be a pretty big decline in the number of new jobs being created, and that would certainly concern the markets here. We're not too concerned that that's going to make a trend, but if we do see more tariffs, and if we do see more companies pulling out of their supply chains, that could eventually hit the labor market in a more, let's say, permanent way.
All right, we'll check back with you. Thanks for joining us today, Paul Christopher, head of global market strategy at Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Coming up on the Noon Business Hour, the growth of DNA testing reveals issues with privacy.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As genetic testing gains popularity, problems with privacy protection are becoming more apparent. Let's discuss the issues with Stephanie Goldberg, a healthcare reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Stephanie, just for clarity at the beginning here, when we talk about genetic testing, what are we talking about here? We see ancestry advertisements all the time. Is that what we're talking about?
That is part of it, yes. So Ancestry.com, 23andMe, those are the direct-to-consumer kits that millions of people have used to learn about their ancestry, their traits, their health. We're also seeing this pop up more, though, in clinical settings, like locally North Shore University Health System recently started offering DNA sequencing, actually as part of primary care.
And so if you're doing that, whether you do it voluntarily or you do it as part of your health care, what are some of the risks? What are some of the things people are concerned about?
So federal law does prevent genetic discrimination by health insurance companies, so, and employers as well. So you don't have to worry about not being hired or being denied health insurance coverage because of your genetic testing, or your sequencing, rather. However, other types of insurers are not covered under that protection. So if you want life insurance, you could be required to present that information, and then they could decide how high your premiums are based on your results.
Has this been actually happening?
It has, yeah. It's a bill that recently passed the House and the Senate in Illinois would prevent direct-to-consumer companies from sharing that information without written consent. However, as some experts have pointed out to me, that consent can actually be compelled. So if I want a particular policy, that life insurer or that long-term care insurer can say, we need that information in order to consider you. And at that point, I would provide consent, I suppose.
And if one is demanding that, they all will be?
That is likely, yes.
Is there any sort of a fear that all this information, pretty, I mean, about as personal as you can get, that this information could be compromised in some way? I mean, we don't even know where this stuff is kept.
Well, when you think about the health hospitals and health centers being the target of so many of these, like, hacker attacks, I mean, there are data breaches happening all the time. That's another area that you kind of have to be aware of. If you're doing this in a clinical setting, you feel safe, obviously, but information gets out.
Yeah, it does, and you never quite know, no matter how secure it is. Any sort of liability on the part of the industry, the people who are actually gathering all this information, or how protected do they have to keep things?
Yeah, well, your information ideally is being kept in these electronic health records. Those are protected by HIPAA, you know, federal law that protects patient protected health information, so patient privacy. But that just—it doesn't account for hackers. It doesn't account for, consumers consenting to release this information to other types of companies. One expert actually told me, like, a condo association could ask for this information because they want to make sure that perhaps you're not at risk for Alzheimer's. So, it's really a new phenomenon. And as this sort of gains steam, we're going to see a lot more of these sort of loopholes be uncovered, and hopefully more protections.
So what do you advise to a family that is going to a hospital for treatment of some member of the family? How do you deal with this or speculate?
It's a tricky question because there are certain parts of the healthcare system where DNA testing has been happening for a long time. Cancer care is one example. There are certain areas where it absolutely makes sense to do this. You want to make sure that you're not at risk for something that's in your family history. It's newer in this primary care setting, so I don't know that I'm at risk for anything. Going to the doctor, I get asked if I want to do a DNA test as part of my routine checkup. I personally might decline at this point, but I could certainly not advise anyone else as to what they should do. But just be aware of the fact that this information is very personal.
Yeah, and there are certainly risks that it may get out and be used. Thank you, Stephanie Goldberg, healthcare reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. Still ahead, Personal Finance Wednesday, a primer on investing in stocks.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
Stocks are on the rise today. We'll see what's moving the markets.
Personal Finance Wednesday, learning the basics of stock trading.
Also on the finance front, why canceling a credit card could actually hurt you.
The trade group representing gasoline stations and convenience stores in Illinois says some will end up closing because of the increases in state taxes on gas and cigarettes.
Wall Street, the Dow up 166 points. The NASDAQ is up 36, and the S&P is up 18. Oil today down a little more than 3.5%.
A nice afternoon, mostly sunny with a high temperature of 80. It's 78 degrees now at O'Hare and 78 at the lakefront.
The Noon Business Hour is presented by Old Second Bank. Markets are gaining ground today. To talk about it, we're joined by Darren Pollack, portfolio manager at Cheviot Value Management, based in Beverly Hills, California. Darren, thanks for joining us. So what do you make of what you see going on today?
Well, thanks for having me. It's great to be with you. It seems like today we've got a continuation of what occurred yesterday, where when the Fed started to come out and be vocal about supporting markets in response to all the trade tension that was really sort of splattering fear throughout the world, that brings a lot of solace to people in the financial markets. And I think they're relieved to hear Powell and a couple others from the Fed saying that they'll do whatever they can to sustain economic growth here in the United States.
We could see some rough riding, though, couldn't we? Down one day and up another day, depending on what is spoken by the leaders on this issue.
There's just no question we're going to see volatility as the White House now knows that it has the Fed support here for the markets. Now that means the White House can really push trade and tariff negotiations in more of an aggressive stance that way. And the Fed will have to ride to the rescue. So you'll have maybe bad trade news, bad economic news coming out of the White House as they negotiate their way through over the next several weeks or months. And then you'll have potentially some good news coming out of the Fed saying, don't worry too much, we're here to support the markets. And let's not kid ourselves, the Fed is watching the market very closely. They have a dual mandate of employment and inflation, but it really should be a triple mandate. And that third one is the markets, keeping people happy.
But what is your advice to investors who are starting to get a headache here with this?
It's never easy to kind of ignore the headlines and to ignore the daily news, especially when you're in the news business, and I'm talking to people who are. But I think the bigger thing for them, for individual investors to do, is to take the long view, look at the big picture, try to own really great companies that can withstand these things. Maybe go back and read some old history, some news from years back, or get into the Microsoft case from 21 years ago and see how these things can seem horrific at the time, catastrophic at the time even. But companies that are solid and markets that are strong will get through it.
And is there something about defensive stocks? Is that part of the advice? We've had a lot of people in recent days talking about more and more money moving over into defensive stocks.
Defensive stocks is a great label, and it's a great concept, only if it's something that investors pay not too high a price for. So you can buy a defensive company like a Procter & Gamble or a Walmart or a Coca-Cola, but if you pay 22 or 24 times earnings for a company that's growing 2 or 4% per year, that's really overpaying. And so this concept of buying a defensive company, sure, the company is fine and it's defensive and it's relatively insulated against these economic vagaries, but that investment could be quite risky because you're paying maybe 50% above the price you should pay for a company that can produce those type of profit figures. So it might be a concept that was a good idea that's being taken too far at this time.
And when it comes to, we'll say, like a company like Kraft Heinz, I mean, at one point that would have been considered a safe defensive bet, but you just don't know what's going to happen in a particular industry. It may not be as defensive as you think.
Very true. Kraft has its own major problems. You know, that was a portfolio of companies, or two companies' portfolios merged together that would have looked great in the 1970s and 1980s. And consumer tastes have changed so dramatically. It seems like management there was really asleep at the wheel. And one of Buffett's bigger mistakes, and we're a huge Buffett and Berkshire fan, but that was one that we'd been scratching our heads about for a few years. And it's not too surprising to see it now. But some of these other companies in that space are more innovative, and they'll do better. But for investors, we're not so sure. You know, they won't decline the 60% that Kraft Heinz has declined. But if you overpay for a good company, prepare to be disappointed. So even if it's a defensive business, it might not be a defensive investment. Defensive investment really comes in how you position your entire portfolio, how you allocate everything, that you're not too aggressively positioned in certain industries, and that you have a good balance across the entire portfolio.
But what about the big tech companies, Google, Amazon, Facebook? Are they overblown, or there's still something that you might want to have in your portfolio?
Well, you know, we actually like a couple of them. We own a couple of them. And in fact, in the last couple of days, we nibbled a little bit more on Google, in fact, because we think that that was a big overreaction earlier in the week to the news. It's similar to what I was referencing earlier with regard to Microsoft from a long time ago. We lived through that experience as well. And, you know, if you used Microsoft as an analogy, that was a company where it took 3 years from the investigation to begin to the settlement to occur. So it's a long period of time. The settlement occurred, and then in those 10 years after the settlement, Microsoft grew its earnings at a rate of nearly 11%, or I'm sorry, its sales at a rate of nearly 11% per year for the next decade. So it's not as if an investigation like this is a death knell for these companies. And in the case of Google, it's one of the best companies in the world. It can continue to grow its earnings at a very high teens rate for almost as far as the eye can see. And it's trading at a valuation like a Walmart or a Coke that's barely growing its earnings. And so when you look at these defensive names that are relatively overpriced, and you look at a Google that's trading at the same valuation and it's growing like a weed by comparison, to us, that's relatively attractive.
Darren Pollack, good insight. Thanks for joining us. Darren is portfolio manager at Cheviot Value Management, based in Beverly Hills. Up next, Personal Finance Wednesday, Stock Investing 101. It's Personal Finance Wednesday here on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're focusing on stocks and what you need to know before you get into the market. We're joined by Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. Craig, a lot of people want to get in. It's a scary thing, and so they don't get in. What's the very first thing that you would tell someone who's never traded stocks before, who doesn't hold anything?
Well, I think, you know what, you have to know your why. Why are you investing? And investing in individual stocks in great companies of America continues to prove to be one of the best ways to grow wealth for retirement. And when you have that strong enough why, which is I want to attain financial freedom for me and my family, the entire thing becomes a little bit less scary. But operationally, how are we going to get started? Well, Well, we first have to begin by doing something simple, which is open up a online trading account.
And so you get that online. You got to figure out how do I fund it? What sort of a strategy do I have? Again, there's a lot to it, but we do want folks to be able to enjoy it and be able to get into it.
That's right. So after we open that online account, the next thing we're going to do is we're going to do something you and I have talked about relentlessly over the years, is we're just going to commit to a budget so we fund that account, not just with a lump sum from our savings, but a monthly remittance to go ahead and allow us to dollar cost average to build our wealth over time. But how do you know what to buy? And when we're moving beyond the 401k, when we're moving beyond mutual funds and index funds, and we're ready to buy shares of a company to partner and invest in a publicly traded company, I think we just build a shopping list based on what we know well, meaning what are the products and services that we use in our everyday life. That's a great place to start doing our research.
That's interesting. We just had a guest on who was talking about some of the stocks that he favors right now, and he said Google, that's something that everybody uses. So a stock like that might be something you'd want to get a little bit of.
Yeah, I think investing in what you know, and when we think of the goods and services we know, like we use search engines every day. You just used an example. We use cell phone makers. Who makes that device? We use networks that carry those signals for us. Who are those network carriers? That's where we should start doing our homework. But it's really important when we talk about investing in what you know, that means buying stocks that you understand why they're relevant today, why they're relevant in the future. But you got to do your homework. And part of doing your homework means patience. Because when you're building a portfolio from scratch, wealth isn't going to get built overnight. Wealth will get compounded over time.
And going in and out of the market would kind of be foolish, wouldn't it?
Well, I think something we always talk about, and we advocate this for everybody, is I think the core of every portfolio can be some good, low-cost, diversified investments that can be funded monthly, whether that be a low-cost mutual fund or index fund. But then I do think there is some excitement, there is some passion, and if we own individual stocks, we're narrowing the focus, which increases the impact of the return to the good and to the bad. So as long as you're taking a balanced approach, some fund, some individual stock, I think that's how we get diversified and improve our results over time.
Good insight. Thank you. Craig Bolano is founding partner and chief executive officer at Wealth Management Group in Inverness. This time tomorrow, Technology Thursday, still to come, a double dose of Personal Finance Wednesday, understanding the full impact of closing a credit card account.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Closing a credit card account can affect your credit score. Let's learn more from Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com in New York. Welcome to the Noon Business Hour. Ted, what happens if I close a card today?
It could hurt your credit score, and that's mostly because of what's called your credit utilization ratio. Essentially, a fancy way of saying credit you're using divided by credit you have available to you. If you cancel a card, you're going to have less credit available, and it could raise your ratio, therefore hurting your score.
Does this happen often?
It does, and I think it's most important. Here's an example. If you have $4,000 charged on your cards and you have $10,000 of available credit, that's a ratio of 40%. That's not too bad. But all of a sudden, if you cancel a card with a $5,000 limit, now your utilization is 80%. So you do have to be careful, especially if you're in the market for a mortgage or an auto loan or something that's going to require a credit check.
So if there's a card that you're not using, you just don't have a need for it, is there a benefit to keeping it open even if you're not using it?
There's definitely a benefit to keeping it open for the utilization and also for the longevity. These are both going to help your credit. So I'd say leave the old ones open. And if you're being charged an annual fee for a card that you're not using, do what's called a product change. Call the issuer, say, can you move me from this annual fee card I'm not using to a card that doesn't charge an annual fee. That way, you keep the credit line, you keep the good history, but you lose the fee.
It's a good idea. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. You talk about longevity. Dwell on that a little bit more, because some people don't realize that, that's actually big on your credit score.
It's the third biggest factor. It makes up 15% of your FICO score. There's a few different ways it's calculated. One is the length of your oldest account, so you really don't want to close that oldest account. But there's also the average age of all of your accounts. That's another reason why you don't want to open a whole bunch of new accounts all at once. I would say, you know, one every 6 months is fine, but don't open two or three all at once. That could look risky.
Thanks so much. Good insight. Ted Rossman, industry analyst at creditcards.com. Closing a credit card account could actually be a negative on that credit score. You'll find past programs later today, a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and also the all-new radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.